Basically, they just end up shitting on you, you know? I don't know how else to put it. And,
can we turn this back on?
Testing 1, 2, 3. I'll make a couple of comments to put Akhil in context. First off, I supported his book, and I'll read you the blurb that I put on the back of the book. This is a moving, detailed, bird's eye view of both the realities of global conflicts in which innocents are called terrorists, in other words, the Chechens. On Russian television, a few weeks ago, I was in Oxford, lecturing at Oxford, and I was with some very senior British intelligence officers, retired. On Russian television, the police caught a bunch of people moving boxes of dynamite into an apartment building in Moscow, and they very grandly announced on TV that they had caught some Chechen terrorists. It turned out it was the Russian KGB. And about 2 weeks later, a major general from the police, sweating bullets, got up and very stiffly read a prepared speech that basically said, "We've discovered that this was actually an official state test exercise to see if we were alert." Bullshit. Okay? The Russians are screwing the Chechens. Big time. We track 18 genocides worldwide. There are two in Russia, the Chechens and the Tatars. There are three in Indonesia. There's a bunch. It's a whole chapter in my book from Greg Stanton, GenocideWatch.org or .com. So the rest of this reading is, in which innocents are called terrorists while governments do the terrorizing. And of the flagrant inadequacies of the CIA and the FBI, each full of good people. Please, if you remember nothing else, remember that I think that everybody who works for the U.S. government is a good person, except for the top managers. Okay? The top managers are good people who do not have a passion for their work. All right? They're political schmoozers rather than serious professionals. And until we have people with a passion for doing intelligence and counterintelligence on behalf of the American community, we're going to continue to have a fucked up bureaucracy across the board. Good people. Trapped in monstrously politicized bureaucracies. I know and admire this Mujahid. He is a loyal American, a faithful Muslim, and a speaker of truth. And then somewhat grandiosely, I say, "Hear him and weep." Okay, that's a little over the top. I'm sorry. But it's a good book. And you won't see this book. Now, there's another book that goes with this by Robert Baer, one of the most famous and successful CIA case officers in the Middle Eastern counterterrorist beat. He's written a book called See No Evil. And in that book, which was approved by the CIA's Publications Review Board, which also approved my books. In that book, he states in black and white with documentation throughout that CIA has no serious assets against terrorism worldwide. Okay, you're looking at one of the two people, John Walker being the other, and I think maybe there's a third, who actually got close to bin Laden and his people, and we screwed it up. But Baer says we don't have assets. Now, why don't we have assets worldwide? We don't have assets worldwide because in the early 1990s, the head of clandestine operations, named Ted Price, could not recruit decent people with college degrees. And so he promoted all of the intelligence assistants and reports officers with high school degrees. They became the case officers. Then we had a guy named Dave Cohen, who's now blessing New York with his presence, in charge of the New York Police Intelligence Department. He's an analyst by training, not a case officer. And his first few weeks on the job, he says, "What's an Axis agent?" And we explained to him that an Axis agent is someone that helps us get close to the real target. He says, "Fire them all. They're not producing intelligence." So we got rid of most of our Axis agents worldwide. And over time, we perpetuated and accelerated a dependency on foreign liaison, which is we ask the people we're supposed to be spying on to tell us what we need to know. Duh. This is really screwed up. Now, I emphasize, everyone who joins CIA and FBI is a patriot that has given up prospects for making more money in the private sector. I was one of two classes that was, they changed the psychological profile from company man, meaning someone who goes along with everything the boss suggests, to self-starter. In both cases, the 1979 class and the 1982 class, 50% of the class quit within 5 years.
We simply couldn't put up with the bullshit. And so one of the things we have to think about is how do we migrate toward different kinds of people? And how do we migrate? For instance, the classical case officer is a hip-shooting cowboy with no master's degree. And the classical analyst is an overeducated introvert that has a social IQ of a large rock, like me. And so these are the wrong kinds of people, because what you really need now today is you need a case officer who is very sensitive about dealing with people as multicultural, complex humans rather than slaves who are there for the $1,000 a month or whatever. And you need case officers that have advanced degrees and understand culture and history and have actually read. And you need analysts who can handle people. Because the acme of skill in the 21st century craft of intelligence, and I have 26 new rules which you can get for free by downloading this chapter from OSS.net from the homepage. The acme of skill in the 21st century is not about knowing the answer, it's about knowing who knows. And about putting the customer with a question in touch with the source who has an answer in near real time, and then refereeing the process so that everybody comes out happy. This is a whole new ballgame. We have an industrial age intelligence system. We have a factory intelligence system. And we need to move to a network intelligence system. And unfortunately, we have the wrong managers. We don't have the tools. We have the wrong culture. And the president made a neophyte's mistake, which is he gave more money to intelligence. All right? Giving more money to bad managers makes them worse. It doesn't lead to effective trade-offs and changing the way you do business. And I had this discussion with Doug Smith, who's the deputy director of was the deputy director of the National Imagery Mapping Agency. I said, Doug, what do we have to do to fix intelligence? He said, we've got to cut the budget. I said, okay, how much do we have to cut the budget by? He said, 1/3. I said, how come? He said, because if you cut the budget by anything less than 1/3, they will continue to make changes on the margin. And they won't fundamentally rethink the way we do business in intelligence and counterintelligence. All right, so you, the American taxpayer, are being screwed because you have a government that doesn't have an effective intelligence or counterintelligence system. It doesn't have an effective diplomatic system. Doesn't have an effective foreign assistance system. And, oh, by the way, we're giving more money to the same people that missed 9/11 in the first place so they can do more of what they want. The Pentagon is about to spend $60 billion on more secret satellites that failed to catch 9/11 in the first place. The latest hot thing in the Pentagon is dragonflies and ants, okay? Micro UAVs, micro unmanned aerial vehicles, little dragonflies that send little data streams back, and ants that crawl up your leg and tell you everything they ever wanted to know about you. Now, imagine that as a processing problem, okay? That shit ain't going to get processed, all right? We don't process what we're getting today from main pipes. There's no way we're going to process all these little things in a coherent system because, among other things, NSA, which has a very good leader who's about to retire, I am going to very much miss Michael Hayden, General Hayden heard me out when I said that NSA should become the National Processing Agency. That might frighten you a little bit, but there's actually a lot of common sense behind it. Because right now what happens is the U.S. government has all these bits of information, mostly in hard copy, and they don't come together anywhere. We're spending billions of dollars on collection. We're spending almost nothing on processing and even less on analysis. So we've got some issues. Akhil, do you have any thoughts on what we should do different? Or if you were president for a day, how would you combat terrorism?
First you have to look at all the foreign policy, everything that America is doing. Some of the things you could change, it would stop pissing people off. Other things, I understand America has to do some things to protect its own interests to survive in the world. That's fine, but at least, be straight with people about that. If you're in this country over here and it's for oil, tell people it's for oil. Don't say it's for protecting democracy or stuff like that. At least some people won't be so angry, because they'll be like, well, at least you're being straight with us, the other things, that there's some conflicts in the world that America is obviously backing one side when legally and morally they should not be backing one side. You know, one side is basically committing genocide, is bulldozing homes and, you know, shooting preteen children in the head. You don't have to take the other party in the conflict there. You don't have to take their side either, but just stop backing one side over the other, and then you'll stop pissing everybody off. So,
thank you. I don't pretend to understand the Israeli-Palestine conflict, but as a failed rationalist, when I look at Bush's statement on peace and Palestine and stuff like that, I basically say, come on. A serious person would have told the Israelis, look, we love you guys. We pay 17% of your national government budget. 17% of the Israeli government budget is paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. 17%. Okay? I said, got a simple message for you guys. I'm going to create a demilitarized zone, and I'm going to put $1 billion a year into reconstructing an independent Palestine state and creating a demilitarized zone. $1 billion a year effective today. And if you don't immediately pull back and turn those settler homes that are invasive over to the Palestinians, I'm going to cut you the fuck off. Okay? If you're Jewish, you may not want to hear that, but I'll tell you something. I personally affiliated with the Jewish group that believes, there's one of them, that believes that we should be more sensible about this. We can't keep doing this. And Saudi Arabia is a despotic regime that is abusing and repressing its people. And Colombia. There's a wonderful little email going around in which the counter-narcotics campaign is actually basically a campaign to try and help the Colombian government eradicate the guerrillas. Well, guess what? The guerrillas are right on most counts, just like the Salvadorans were right on most counts with respect to land reform and so forth. I survived El Salvador. What we have here is a very loosely educated American policy elite that is out of touch with reality, that is not paying attention to intelligence and is not funding intelligence to the level where it can make sense to them. And we have a bunch of apathetic posers, you guys, who are not voting and orchestrating and organizing. Okay? Norman Cousins has a wonderful section in his book on the pathology of power, which he says, governments are built to perceive small and intermediate truths. Only the people can perceive the greatest truths. And the greatest truth that we need to perceive today and educate our government on is that there are some really big problems that need a uniformed, consensual, national response. And letting Halliburton make billions of dollars so that Cheney's stock options and escrow can go up is not a good idea. So I think right now the American taxpayer is being betrayed. Now let me say, let's have kind of an informal virtual break. Anybody who needs to go to the bathroom, whatever, do so. And we will now start with Akhil's help, unless you want to leave. Okay, he's going to the bathroom. And by the way, if you'll notice, he's walking. Okay, that leg has room for all kinds of cool shit. But CIA wasn't willing to work with him on it. Look at all the space that's in there. All right, does anyone have a question about spine? All right. Yeah, he's asking how I feel about Saudi Arabia, basically. Look, the Limits to Growth people had it right 20 years ago. That's right, there's a microphone here, so we'll start using that. How I feel about energy independence? First off, I think we should let the Saudis hang. Walk away from it. I also support Brzezinski's view that Turkey and Iran are the linchpins for that region. Yes.
Yeah, I'm.
Well, I feel it's true. Among other things, there are fuel-efficient engines that are being locked up in patent protection in order to preserve the oil monopolies. Same thing with paint, polymer paints that are infinitely unscratchable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of this shit that's locked up. I think that knowledge that isn't used or put on the market within 3 to 7 years should become public domain knowledge. Okay. But until the Greens, the Reform Party, the Libertarians, and Ross Perot get their shit together and actually talk to each other, we are going to continue to be stuck with a Democratic-Republican axis that is not representative of the people, period. You really got to buy my books, if only for the annotated bibliography. There's a book called The Radical Center by Lind and Halstead, who run the New America Foundation. And they said, for the first time in history, the majority of Americans perceive themselves as independents. Okay, there is a tipping point coming here. I don't know if it will happen in the next presidential election, although I think that George Bush is doing everything he can to get kicked out of office. But there's a tipping point coming here. I don't know what's going to happen in the congressional elections, but I hope that they are an indicator. Let me go to you, ma'am, in the front.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the scoop is on Mideastern women now being used as terrorists. There was something, Shahidas, is that what they're called, Shahidas?
Well,
and there was supposed to be a training camp even in Virginia.
Oh, I'm sorry, Shahidas, let me make a sidestep.
Maybe I missed
something. He proposed, hang on, I'm going to answer your question. Yeah. He proposed to the FBI that he set up a training camp for jihad in Arizona. And they blew him off. Well, on CNN today, the latest FBI alert is that they're planning to set up a training plant in Oregon. Okay? I mean, he was years ahead of his time. Because a training camp in Arizona would have been an absolutely super cool place to attract every guy you wanted to look at. Now, on women, Bin Laden is and his studs are most willing to use porn sites and other things in order to put steganography, which some of you probably are very familiar with, which is changing the grayscale, as a communications device. Now, women, under the fundamentalist Islam view, are badly mistreated and really looked down on. But this is what's called asymmetric warfare. They've realized that women aren't searched and women aren't controlled, and therefore women make sense. I'll tell you, suicide changes the whole equation. New Orleans will go away if someone blows up one of those oil service boats and takes out the levee. Okay? Levee, whatever. I learned English in a concentration camp. But New Orleans is extremely vulnerable to an oil service boat blowing up or whatever. I mean, that levee is a huge Achilles heel. Los Angeles has some major issues with port security. Most of the rest of the country is built on the premise that we only need to insure against acts of God, not acts of suicidal man or woman. Now, Indonesia is a good case study for women. Ralph Peters, who wrote Will America Triumph, The Fight for the Future, he's kind of our Lawrence of Arabia these days. He just did a long report on Indonesia. And one of the neat things about Indonesia, which is very, very Islamic, is the women don't take any shit from the men. They're very liberated, secular, very much co-equal with the men. And the United States is busy pissing all over Indonesia. I mean, our idea of helping Indonesia is to send a few special forces troops. We really haven't given it some thought. I'll end with one other comment, and I certainly don't mean to pander to the women, although I'm married to one, and she allows me to stay around. The single best investment for taxpayer money overseas is the education of a woman. If you spend $1 educating a woman overseas, it has health implications, energy implications, the whole bit. Michael O'Hanlon wrote about that. All right, please let the next person step forward. Thank you.
I'm not quite sure if this is totally topical, and it's also based on assumption.
I wasn't aware I had been topical at all tonight. Okay, and I hope you guys will direct questions to Akhil, too, who went to a lot of trouble to get here.
Also, it's also based on the assumption that there's a problem with media today, it being very centralized and probably interest-driven. What would you recommend from to the general public or for small organizations to...
Pirate radio, to begin with. Howard Rheingold is a friend of mine, and I admire him very much. Howard was the editor of the Whole Earth Review. In fact, my first radical article came out in the Whole Earth Review in fall of 1992, called E3I, Ethics, Ecology, and Evolution, an Alternative Paradigm for National Intelligence. It really concerns me that we've given up the airwaves. I think citizens basically need to vote in Greens and other responsible representatives of the people, because if you lose control of the airwaves, you've just lost control of your mind. And we need to have neighborhood-based information enterprises that are not only responsive to the neighborhood and representative of the neighborhood's interests, but also in concentric circles can tie the neighborhood into the decisions at the state, national, regional, and global levels.
But you got the self-perpetuated problem right now in terms of, you know, there's the TV for people go for that for world information or whatever information. They're going to the newspapers, which are all being centrally controlled as well.
Well, you know, Noam Chomsky was way ahead of the rest of the world with manufacturing consent and things like that.
Yeah.
I was in Paris one weekend, and I'm now too fat and too old to get into trouble. So I sat in my hotel room because I was stuck between countries, and watched CNN for a weekend. It was a terrible experience because they were just recycling crap, you know, very shallow crap. There's a book by McKibben called Missing Information. It's an absolutely lovely book. I review it in I think, my first book. But you can also see all my reviews on Amazon.com. McKibben tape recorded all of the television for 24 hours, and then he looked at it over the course of a year, and then he went out and sat on a Thoreau mountaintop for a day, 24 hours, and he compared the relative value of the two. It's a very, very interesting book. I think consumers and citizens really underestimate their power. Look at what McDonald's did once people started saying, we ain't buying your shit unless you get rid of all this plastic stuff. They did it. They listened. People have much more consumer power than they understand. And they have much more vocal power than they understand. And they have much more voting power than they understand. The problem right now is people aren't voting. They're not interested. They're not doing citizen intelligence. They're not doing citizen networking. They're not doing citizen newspapers. And that's where we have to get to. And so the hack is to basically get people back in the business of controlling or at least being able to access the information they need to be good voters. I mean, one of the great things about America is that a vote can still trump corporate corruption. But you got to get out and vote. And I'm really concerned that the Greens will go with Nader again and will not do anything to do outreach to the Reform Party, to Pat Buchanan. I made a comment last night that I don't think any one president or any one party can run this country anymore. You actually have to announce a team approach. And so if I were Ralph Nader, I would get Pat Buchanan on board. I would get Colin Powell on board. And I would announce a team approach to governance. And if you look at the last part of Nader's book on crashing the party, the 10 principles that he outlines there, and I'm going to have to cut you off, next person. But the 10 principles that he outlines there is, all right, I'm going to change my mind very quickly. But the 10 principles that Nader has in the back of his book, that's what we should all be for, whether with or without Nader. Go on.
So other than pirate radio stations and more participation in terms of generating forms of information, you don't have any solutions.
I think you need to take control of your congressmen and your senators, okay?
But you can't do that with the media basically either skewing information or not giving information.
You can do it door-to-door. You can do it door-to-door. It's called asymmetric warfare. Basically, we've got to get out the vote, and we've got to get out the volunteers. And that's the bottom line. And, you know, there's that old song, give me one man, and he'll give me 10 and 10,000 and so on and so forth. One of the reasons I come to these meetings, constantly surprised that I'm invited back, is that you refresh me. I mean, this is a great bunch of people, including all my Fed friends in the audience. This is a great bunch of people, and you ought to do more. And I'm really irritated with the media for not being here, but you're either boring or threatening from their perception. All right, next person.
Very brief question. What you stated is that we're living right now in an information society, and so information is paramount. Could you elaborate on the methodics of actually making decisions and how you outline
sure.
100 influential people?
Well, okay, let me do this in three quick pieces. First off, the intelligence and counterintelligence process really are good. They work. Now, the intelligence process, which I described briefly in the second book, basically is requirements definition. What is it you need to know? Then collection management. Where can you find out this information and what's the validity and so forth of the sources? And then source fusion, multi-source fusion into an analytic product that answers your question, that's actionable intelligence. And then finally dissemination, which usually, in the case of a busy person, means it can be no more than a 5-minute video or a 1-page report. And so, of course, CIA spends all its time putting together really big reports that nobody ever reads. The dirty little secret about the $30 billion we spend is not only do we not process 90% of it, but the 10% of it that we do process is basically unread by anybody that matters. Colin Powell has canceled his Intelligence Morning brief, saying it's useless to him. There are a number of cabinet secretaries that have canceled their CIA briefings because they don't see the relevance to their work, because we still are focused on 5 or 6 major targets and one customer, the President of the United States. Who admittedly needs a $30 billion remedial education program. But that was unforgivable. I'm so ashamed of myself. But the intelligence process works, okay? Now, what passes for analysis today in the private sector really sucks. I mean, we've all seen the disclosures about industry analysts being corrupt people who were not doing their homework, who were basically exploding the customer, as Michael Lewis wrote in Liar's Poker, which is a very good exposure several years ago. The intelligence process works. The counterintelligence process works if it's done properly. And one of the things that people don't understand about terrorism is that citizens are absolutely essential for counterterrorism. I was assigned over a weekend to go down and blow up the Supreme Allied Command Atlantic. In theory. In other words, I went in, I did everything, took pictures of the generals' houses, they were all listed in the phone book, and over the course of a weekend created a 2-page plan for basically blowing up the Roosevelt aircraft carrier with cigarette boats, which no Navy can stop, cigarette boats loaded with explosives and a nice shaped, you know, metal cone charge, and taking out SACLAN headquarters at 7 in the morning. And they freaked. And I blew up the Hampton Roads Tunnel while I was at it. This is asymmetric. Now, as I was going in and taking my pictures and doing this very hostile, intrusive kind of thing, I was keeping careful track of who saw me. A waitress on her cigarette break outside of the Fisherman's Wharf restaurant saw me taking pictures of the aircraft carrier. A NATO security guard saw me loading up gas at a gas station that was closed. Closed on a Sunday. Now, I have to be fair, it would take credit cards, so I was pumping gas. But the point is, I kept track of who was seeing me. And, well, all those people, A, they didn't know what to look for. B, they didn't know who to tell. And C, if you do tell them, like the flight instructor who called the FBI and said, this guy wants to learn how to fly into the World Trade Center. And there was a movie actor that saw these guys in first class casing the front end of the compartment. The FBI didn't want to deal with that. So what we have here is a huge disconnect. The public needs to be educated. In fact, if you look at airport security, I mean, it's easy in hindsight. But in retrospect, what we should have done rather than grounding the entire fleet and panicking the whole country is an immediate FCC message to every plane to announce to all the passengers then in the air, the paradigm has changed. It's no longer BCOM see Cuba. It's now kill the motherfucker or you're dying too. Okay? This is information. Okay? Instead of going through all of this nonsense that has just completely destroyed the American aviation industry, that one little snippet of information which cost nothing to distribute, could have changed our defensive paradigm. Okay, and that was the difference between the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania and the other two. They had the information from cell phones. I've lost my train of thought. Okay, so the first is the process of intelligence. The second is we are really illiterate and ignorant when it comes to doing legal, ethical, open source intelligence, okay? Not just students, but think tanks now. Reputable think tanks are publishing 40-page motor-mouth opinions with no footnotes, bibliography, or index, and throwing in a couple of appendices of government documents, and they're calling that a book. Okay? Academics. I go to the International Studies Association every year trolling for potential employees, and 90% of those people have no original ideas and can't write. It's really scary. Kids in high school now are getting by on internet surfing rather than learning how to use the Social Science Citation Index, which is by the Institute of International Studies. In fact, let me use this as a case study in six phone calls. I was asked, am I on here? Okay. I was asked in 1995 to take on the entire U.S. intelligence community by the Aspin-Brown Commission. And the test case, which was given to me at 5 o'clock on a Thursday evening, what's going on here?
Off?
Okay, that's off and this is on.
Okay.
Huh? Still on. No, okay, good. The test case, which is instructive, was Burundi. 5 o'clock on a Thursday, they turned to me, they turned to the staff director, Britt Snyder, and they said, okay, by 10 o'clock Monday morning, we're everything you've done on Burundi. Well, I was on my way to Las Vegas, interestingly enough, to talk to DEF CON. I like DEF. I don't go to DEF CON anymore, but I like Jeff and support his work. So I called my assistant, who was still there, told her which five faxes to send, and then she sent me a fax with everyone's phone number. And in Las Vegas on a Friday, I made five phone calls. LexisNexis. I said, I want the top 10 journalists in the world who have reported from the front lines in Burundi and Rwanda so that I can immediately arrest them and interrogate them. Okay? So, top 10 journalists. Just kidding. There's still something going on here. John, please turn off the microphone. Huh? Is this one? Yeah, right. Okay, so, top 10 journalists in the world. This is easy to do. No one does it. Then I called the Institute of Scientific Information, which publishes the Social Science Citation Index and the Science Citation Index. I want the top 10 people in the world who have been cited in peer-reviewed publications as authorities on Burundi, Rwanda. And I got that. Top 10 academics in the world. A couple of U.S. guys, a couple of... get up against the wall.
So essentially it's peer-reviewed?
No. That's the second step. Third thing I did was called Jane's Information Group. And I had them put together a tailored binder, which had one-page orders of battle for each tribe in the conflict, at a time when the government was only looking at the official army wearing uniforms. There's still something wrong here. Can we do something about audio?
I can give you the podium mic and turn off your lapel.
All right. Now this is off.
Take podium mic.
That can follow instructions. All right. So Jane's did one-page orders of battle and then also one-paragraph proceeds, right? Then I called ECU Publications in Minnesota, and all these people are on my website in the open source marketplace, so you can go kind of browse. And they're specialists at getting all of what used to be top-secret Russian military maps for the Third World out into the Western world. Well, Russia spent a lot of money on Third World maps because of the Wars of Liberation. Did you know that your government does not have tactical military maps for 90% of the world? 90% of the world. The best we can do is the 1 to 250 pilot charts. Okay? We don't have tactical 1 to 50s for Somalia, Haiti, Burundi, and all of that stuff. Okay? So he sent all of that stuff, Russian military maps. I called Oxford Analytica, which was started by David Young, who worked with Kissinger on the NSC, and I had them send all these two-page briefings that they do for executives. And they had done about 20 over the course of 5 years on Burundi and Rwanda, what it meant for the U.S. and foreign relations and capitalism and the U.N. and so on. And last but not least, belatedly, because I didn't know them that day, but about 2 weeks later, I called Spot Image in France. And it turned out they had 100% of Burundi commercial imagery, cloud-free, less than 3 years old. at the 1 to 50 level, which is what you need for tech. This is 6 phone calls. The CIA had the World Fact Book and one of those cute little color-coded maps of the region. Okay? Now, no disrespect to my colleagues at CIA, because they're good people who are basically suffering under a monstrously tyrannical system that is seriously perverted in terms of its priorities and its methods and its views of what needs to be done for intelligence. So knowing who knows and being able to make those phone calls and get that stuff in near real time is what really matters. But we don't do that. We have an industrial era system. Last but not least, you got to be able to mesh. The internet is a starting point. Commercial premium services, and if you're not using Factiva Dialog and LexisNexis, you're not serious. You have to be able to go for gray literature in foreign languages. Gray literature is limited edition publications that are legally and ethically available, but you have to know they exist and you have to know where to go to get them. Okay? We don't do that because embassies don't go out looking for stuff. The only people in a U.S. official installation overseas that have the money with which to buy local knowledge are the spies. And they require that you commit treason as a condition of employment. Okay? This makes no sense at all. If you had $100,000 to $200,000 for each embassy and they had a little analytic cell that could buy open source intelligence, gray literature, the whole bit, we could increase what we know about the world by an order of magnitude. Okay? And then finally, you have experts on demand. Which is, it's impossible to have an expert on left-handed Lithuanians with earwax problems, okay? But there's going to come a day when you need one, and you have to be able to go get that expert and use them. As I routinely, for under $6,000, I will go find the world's top expert on the Zeeman effect, which is really cool. You can detect underground facilities from outer space by detecting electromagnetic variations in the Earth that suggest that there's a lot of power underground. DNA signatures, living tissues, which is put the dog's nose in a box so you don't have to feed it or collect the poop. This is really good stuff. And for under $6,000, $2,000 to find them, because it costs $1,000 to do this dialogue ranking thing, $500 for the database time and $500 for the analyst time, 4 hours. You just put all that together. And then last but not least, the tools suck. One of the neatest things CIA ever did was called Computer-Aided Tools for the Analysis of S&T, Catalyst. And it had three tiers. It had the desktop publishing tier, and then it had the decision support tier, which was modeling and, simulation and judgments and all of this stuff. And then it had the data entry and conversion thing, which was geospatial and video and audio and how do you make all that work, including translation. Well, in 1987, when this idea came to maturity and it was being piloted by Gordon Ehler in the Office of Scientific and Weapons Research, he was spending $8 million a year on Sun and Next workstations. He was doing object-oriented programming. And CIA made a corporate decision that they would go with the PS2 and the secretly neurotic architecture. They turned themselves stupid overnight. Okay, and they literally blew away the opportunity to create analytic tools that would have had an order of magnitude impact on CIA analysis. Now, they're doing some good things today in terms of thinking about analytic tradecraft and how do you do really good analysis, because right now we don't do a lot of analysis in the U.S. Or anywhere else. It's really a lot of the stuff is fly-by-night stuff. So you put those things together. You put the process of intelligence together. You put this internet through gray literature and experts on demand thing. Oh, by the way, when you talk to an expert, you shouldn't have to require that they go through a lifestyle polygraph. And Akhil mentioned this. One of the problems we have is that we don't like to work with people who aren't recruited agents who have passed a polygraph. There's lots of stuff you can do as a straight-up one-time business proposition. I guarantee you, for $1 million, I can get an audio device anywhere. Okay? And I have not found anyone who turns me down when I offer them $2,000 a day for weekend's work. And we're just not thinking out of the box here. So I hope that very long answer satisfies you. I will ask, yes, quick question for Akhil, because I want to respect his presence here.
As a man who has taken up arms for a cause that you consider just, and I think you could be called a good specialist on how transparent world borders are. How serious do you think the interior threat to the United States is? How many actual combatants we're dealing with, and what is the magnitude of the threat?
outside? You mean outside threats, like in
inside
Afghanistan?
The U.S.
How many enemies do we have inside right now in the state?
Outside the Beltway.
Sorry, cheap shot. This is my worst ever.
Outside the Beltway, not too many. No, really, honestly, there's not, you know, all the sleeper cells that they talk about and these things. I mean, there's actual sleeper cells that have been sent here under order or something. I mean, really, honestly, they number probably, you know, 5-6 guys here or there. Then there's other groups of people that I'm sure are just, you know, upset with the way things are going, and they might hook up with a friend and they're potentially dangerous. But then, you know, you have that with, you know, militia groups and everything else. So, but actual, you know, serious threats, I mean, not very many. That's not the stage that we're in right now. You know, it might get worse later, but right now I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Here in Columbia, one of the problems is random terrorism. Here in New York City, a Columbia University professor was killed by a couple of Islamics a few years ago. And my basic feeling was they got all hopped up over one of these sermons. There was a very good PBS documentary done on mullah sermons in the United States inciting Islam adherents to kill Americans. You know, maybe we should not let them do that.
That was going on for 10 years, actually. More
yes, exactly. But see, we don't do foreign languages. I tell you, the biggest counterintelligence mistake in history, and I've got this, I've got a table which outlines the 5 policy failures and 6 intelligence failures that led to 9/11. After the first World Trade Center bombing here in New York City, the screwed up car bombing, the FBI captured an entire house full of documentation. And they didn't translate it. They didn't read it. Because they had one guy in the New York field office responsible for Arabic, and he didn't want to do it. And they didn't have the $250,000 that they needed in the budget to actually outsource it to the private sector. And it never occurred to them to just digitize it and post it on the net and ask for volunteers. Okay? So as a result, we had a treasure trove. And we also had the same thing after the guy blew himself up in the Philippines. We've had some French arrests. We had a whole bunch of stuff. None of this stuff has been translated or read. We're clueless. We need a different model here. We need a different kind of person. We need a whole different approach. And I'm afraid, I'm very concerned that it's going to take another 5,000 body bags before we get it. And that's not original to me. Someone else said that when Condi Rice had someone going through Washington doing a review. We're in seriously deep shit. Because we're very, very vulnerable. Okay, next person.
I guess a question for each of you, if possible. First, for you, Mr. Steele.
Robert.
Yeah. Robert. Mr. Robert Steele.
Fair.
I assume the answer is that it's in your books, and that's fine. Maybe that's what I'm looking for.
Or it's in the 10,000 pages of free information on my website.
Do you address, or how would you address the idea, and if I understand you correctly, that you're going to have an open source, or rather an open community-based intelligence service that comprises any number of...
Not me, you.
Right,
we the people.
You're also going to have secrets and national intelligence as well. Presumably there's going to be a border between where secret and public... open and closed is. Who arbitrates that border? And within the border of the secret and the closed, why won't there be the same problems that you elucidate, enumerate within the intelligence services today?
One of the most revolutionary developments I think that's come along is peer-to-peer computing. I'm really waiting to see that mature. Sunshine does a lot of good. And one of the interesting things about open source intelligence is that roughly 80% of what you need to know to do good foreign policy, for example, is unclassified. But we're not reading it. I mean, 90% of what we need to know to do good foreign policy on Arabic countries, for example, we don't know because we're not reading the newspapers, we're not attending the mosques, we're not putting it all into a digital thing that can be farmed out. So the first layer, and you saw my chart with lessons of history, okay, we're ignorant. Dutch intelligence service is still talking about the young CIA analyst that came sweeping into Holland about 4 years ago. No, actually about 1992 or 93. She was the desk analyst, the analyst, not the case officer, for the Netherlands, and she came sweeping in like the Queen of Sheba and thought that because she was CIA's point person for the Netherlands that she was a goddess. She didn't speak Dutch. She had never read any Dutch history or Dutch culture or whatever. And in 15 minutes, they slammed the door on her. And they're still talking about it. We can't do that kind of stuff. We really have to get serious about the quality of personnel at the top. And that means you have to hire at mid-career. In my world, you don't get to touch secrets until you've proven that you're one of the top 10 Americans in that domain area. Okay, so you have to be a reputable top person on Somalia before I'll share secrets with you. But that's against the bureaucratic regulations, which require that you be under 35.
And not have ever lived next door to a communist.
And not have lived next door to a communist or smoked dope or done any of those other things that we allow presidents but not employees to do. In fact, we've now had two druggy presidents. So I guess the standards are loosening. The key thing here is in a distributed intelligence system, all of the good that comes out of public scrutiny and public collaboration works. Now, Rob Gongrich and Andy Mueller just totally trashed my idea for a virtual intelligence community. Rob's the guy who does Hacktech, and Andy's the chaos ICANN guy. I'm still waiting to see if he wears a suit to ICANN meetings. I'm sure he doesn't. But they said it'll never work because they're worried about deception. They're worried about false information. They're worried that, let's say we set up a working group on oil independence, they're worried that the oil companies will then flood that with information that will then create a distorted picture. I don't think that's a valid objection. I think that we're smart enough to have trusted moderators and distributed alternative competing viewpoints that ultimately coalesce. What we haven't done is we've got the World Wide Web virtual library, which is extremely rudimentary, and it focuses only on links, and you have to do the work. Okay, it's like these new modern military rations. I was in the Marine Corps infantry, and God, I would die for a can of peaches, you know, or any of the fruit cocktail, especially. I really like that. Well, now we have all these dehydrated rations because they're lightweight, mixed with water. You carry the water. Okay. Same thing with the virtual, with the World Wide Web. Go after all these links, you have to do the reading. So what we have to do is create a public intelligence agency. We have to create a distributed virtual intelligence community where neighborhoods have their own trusted moderators and topics have their trusted masters. And you earn, you know, just like Amazon.com grading books, you have to earn different kinds of respect. And over time, I believe we can create, using the web, a distributed intelligence community so that when George Bush comes out and says something really, really dumb, there is an immediate response, which basically says this is the people's view, and it's communicated to these representatives. Now, the cyber advocacy brief that I recommended to you guys from Pinkham, from PAC.org, really talks about how some groups are starting to do this pretty well. AFL-CIO, the National Rifle Association, a few others. But what hasn't happened is no one has gotten it down to zip code specificity. And one of the reasons, and one of the most important new rules for intelligence is because none of our data has geospatial tags. We need an XML geo standard so that every data from any medium has a time and space identity, a time and place identity. Once you do that as a national or international standard, you immediately get to where you can say, show me everything there is about this square kilometer in this time frame. And then you can get to an analytical report, which is then validated by people who read it and have their own knowledge. And ultimately, you end up creating a citizens intelligence agency that uses legal and ethical sources and methods to arrive at informed judgments. And that also shares the burden. Okay? Did you have a question for him?
I did. How the heck did you end up fighting for the Chechens? What's your background? How did it come about?
Go buy the book.
Is that available still? I thought.
Yes, it's on Amazon.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful book, and I endorsed it because it's a wonderful book. Okay. Thanks. We'll get to every question, no matter how long it takes.
You mentioned about the
failure of the intelligence organizations in the U.S. taking advantage of all of the information and analyzing it. I was wondering, is there any organization that other countries in Europe, in England, Israel, Egypt, any of these countries that we could look at as an example of how to do this right?
Well, no one agency or country, was it you that sent me the email? No, okay, someone else sent me an email with William Sapphire's list of best-dressed intelligence agencies. And so I've been thinking about this a little bit. No one community gets it right across the board. In fact, the Americans, people seem to forget, is the newest intelligence community in the world. Okay, we're the new guys on the block. The Brits do very good analysis. The Israelis do very good prisoner interrogation. The Israelis do very, very good. Well, actually, I don't think they torture as much as you might believe. I mean, they've got dumb soldiers just like we have dumb cops. But by and large, I think torture doesn't work. Arresting their relatives works, which is a Syrian practice. But they do very, very good behind-the-lines telephone taps. They'll send teams into Egypt and Jordan, and I've reviewed one of the books on Israeli military intelligence, and I think they do a lot of things at the tactical level very well. The French are extremely good at using second-generation Arabs. The Americans have a reluctance to take second-generation Arabs because we like them, you know, third-generation, whatever. We've actually gotten much worse at the business of intelligence in the last 50 years, I think, because of our dependence on collection technology and our lack of investment in processing and our complete lack of investment in human intelligence, including analysis. We've basically treated our people as interchangeable, expendable cogs in a much larger machine. And at the end of the day, the new craft of intelligence is about really smart, culturally tuned-in, multilingual people that have their shit together. And unfortunately, the ones that we have are suppressed, repressed, exploited, abused. I attended the Intelligence Producer Consumer course at CIA as part of something I was doing in 1986. And I had analysts in a class complaining that if they read a book at their desk, they were considered to be slacking. They were only supposed to read secrets. Okay? So you have some real cultural issues. Now, there is a project taking shape that may receive funding from a New York foundation. And if anyone is interested in putting us in touch with other foundations or contributors, what we have in mind is precisely this. Going out to retired senior executives from the many foreign intelligence agencies around the world and asking them for success stories and asking them for specifics about what kinds of people really work best. I mean, Michael Levin is a good example of a good street guy who will absolutely never survive if he's required to work in Washington. I'm an example, the suit aside, of a failure. In terms of working with bureaucrats who want me to be stupid for most of the time, bosses who don't appreciate independence. And so over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, we're planning to basically create metrics for success in every aspect of collection, analysis, covert action, and counterintelligence, which includes counterterrorism. And we're going to publish those metrics, and we're going to create a congressional project. And then we're going to set about evaluating the United States intelligence community publicly against those metrics. And we are going to basically be a real pain in the ass for the next 10 years. And I'm looking forward to dedicating my next 10 years to that project and to the 8 books that I have planned. So there is hope. But I think one of the things... Thank you, if I survive... one of the things that I think we need to do is create a public intelligence network that is very structured, although independent and distributed. I mean, you need to be able to have a reliable place where you can go to evaluate U.S. foreign policy and spending on Somalia or Chechnya or whatever. And one of the people, the other person that endorsed this book is Robert Young Pelton, who wrote the book, the guidebook, The World's Most Dangerous Places. One of the problems we have is that most embassies and most journalists are reporting third hand. They haven't actually been to the combat zone. They can't actually tell that the Chechens are being bombed into oblivion, having never done anything against the Russians. Okay? And so we have all this media distorted stuff. And so you end up actually having to move to where you have, I love this Nokia camera, you know, the cell phone with the camera. The day is going to come when every citizen is armed with a wireless camera. And shit's going to happen, and there's going to be a geospatial notice, and 100 Nokia cameras are going to be going, you know, and then that's all going to be processed back into a pirate radio, a pirate TV thing. And what? Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, power to the people, okay? Technology can give you power.
But wouldn't one of the directory projects that already exists for the web be utilized for this as a basis for the intelligence?
The short answer is yes, but the long answer is no, because everybody is still thinking in terms of connecting to text. And what I have found in 10 years is that the text is only the beginning. What you actually need is a weekly intelligence report on that topic that is kind of the standard. That's the global standard. And if you want to have your own intelligence report, that's fine. And over time, you guys can fight it out, and ultimately one will win. But that's only the beginning of the process. You then need distance learning modules, because when I look at professional email lists and stuff like that, for instance, the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals, skip.org, their forum consists of 90% of the people saying, "Hi, I'm new. How do I wipe my butt?" And the 10% that actually know something have unsubscribed. So you need distance learning modules that raise the standard for being able to open your mouth. Okay. You need an expert forum that is moderated and could even be at multiple levels of classification. For example, I have a patent in progress for something that allows you to read a forum at whatever level you're cleared to. And your response then can go in at whatever level you want. It's actually kind of like color-coded. So, for example, if you're discussing arsenic in Bangladesh water, this is highly relevant to Coca-Cola, okay? And so you could have the private sector discussing arsenic in Bangladesh water at the unclassified level, and then there could come in a classified report that says this is because there is a Russian toxic dumping program going on. And the point is, no expert should have to go to 16 different forums in order to grab the information at multiple levels of classification or multiple source sharing agreements. One of our biggest time wasters right now is we have bilateral agreements with everybody, and we don't have multilateral agreements. So the Brits and the French, for example, we pretend that we're telling them stuff individually when in fact we're simply going door to door and repeating the process. So we need to massively move toward multilateral information sharing at multiple levels of classification. And then over time, we'll get to it. I'll tell you what is good. What is good is that the Internet has changed the world. The Internet and peer-to-peer computing have irrevocably altered the power relationship between the people and the corporations. I mean, among other things, I would eliminate personal status for corporations. They should not be treated as individuals. But we can do that. We can do that. And I believe that the United States of America is the place where it will happen. It's going to take 10 to 20 years. This is not an easy fight. This is a really long uphill battle. And while Lori Wallach is off managing riots in Seattle, I want to be working on a public intelligence agency that can actually out all these people in their own neighborhoods. Okay? I want to embarrass corporate executives in their own neighborhoods with direct mail to their neighbors, okay, telling the truth about what it is they're doing. All right, let's go on to someone else.
Do you have anything you want to say? Yes, sir. Hello. My name is Jeffrey Smith, and I want to tell you that your talk here has been a breath of fresh air. As far as your associate here, I can just say to you this. The number of people who have come forward to both police intelligence and public safety in this country and have put themselves on the line, have selflessly done this, and has been terribly abused, is a legion of people. The number of people over the last, say, 30 years, of some of the most valuable minds that have entered intelligence, who have been discouraged by just what he's saying, believe me.
And Mike Levine also.
Yes, exactly. Just what he's saying. The bureaucracy has ground down hundreds of our most valuable human weapons for public safety. He's absolutely right. He's also absolutely right that if we could distribute this, if we could have more public involvement, it would crush the bureaucracy's stranglehold. However, there is something I do have to take serious issue with you.
I'm ready.
You know it's coming. Your overview is wrong and limited and fatally flawed in a number of ways. First of all, why the hell do you think this is all happening? Because the bureaucracy is doing it on its own? Listen, forget about us being surrounded by enemies. America's problems, understand this, America's problems are on the island of Manhattan. It's okay. The characters here, like the Council on Foreign Relations, like the Trilateral Commission, like the Lucis Trust, all these people that generations of patriotic organizations have been yelling about for maybe 40 years.
Okay, I got it. And you're going to have to stop.
Okay.
You got the message. And if you want to talk to me again after I've had a really stiff drink, okay. I will be here for the rest
Fine.
Of the night.
I tell you what. I invite you tomorrow at 12 o'clock. No, tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
I don't have time. I'm on an airplane. Okay, Bear at OSS.net. Okay, next.
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for being here. You realize how hard it is to find this many of you in one spot that actually think I might be right? Next person.
Hi, I'm Rosa Celia.
Hello. Hi.
Known as Big Bertha on Emmanuel's show. Sometimes I call in. One question to you, one question to the Mujahideen. The question, well, two-part question. One, this failure to the WTC, both 93 and 2001, like GM and Ford had planned obsolescence, and you make the factory
right.
analogy, this planned, could this be planned ignorance?
Look, Chomsky was there way before all of us, yes.
And what are they setting us up for if Manhattan gets or hit again?
Manhattan will be hit again.
What do you think the political landscape would look like? Do you think anyone in this room would not be in an internment camp? Anyone?
No. Let's not go there. Let's go with information.
Okay.
The WTO and the IMF have the wrong economic models.